Yeah, and this is something I'm working on behind the scenes, and I'm going to say it here first. Like, I am working on creating a course for free where it's just delivery of instruction. It is not, okay, here's ground ball drills. Here's hitting drills. There needs to be something that is, how do you speak to kids? I'm not talking four. How do you talk to a kid who's nine who doesn't understand what you're talking about? How do you engage that child? I think, like you said, Dave, I think that's pivotal. And that's what helps grow the game. No doubt about it. Like, it's a major, major concept for sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the world's favorite youth baseball podcast, Clearing the Bases, featuring Coach Jimmy Filangieri. I'm David Friedman. I want to thank you for coming along on this ride with us.
It's, do you love working with kids? Are you passionate about really engaging? They have to love working with young kids. Like, I hear coaches that are like, it's just babysitting. Like, no, we're not a babysitting service. This is an educational youth development company. We take it dead seriously. Just like a kindergarten teacher, you know, a kindergarten teacher molds their future, right? Learning, math, reading, etc. That's the way I look at it with us in baseball.
So there you have a few words leading into our interview with Justin Sherman. Justin is the founder of Just In Time Baseball. And what Just In Time Baseball is, it's an independent baseball training, softball training, and coaching business located in Westchester County, New York. What they do is they partner up with little leagues, rec programs, private groups, and even do individuals throughout the Westchester and Connecticut area. I think you'll find there's a lot of good information here about training young players, training coaches also, and I think you'll be able to find some useful information that maybe you can implement in your youth programs. So let's bring on Justin.
I really appreciate you having me on. It's great talking with two individuals who love the game and have a wealth of knowledge. It's great to be on. So really, everyone's, you know, path or, you know, journey is different. And I know, especially on your podcast, you've had so many great guests who had different journeys and stories. Mine is a little bit different, just like everyone else. I went to New Rochelle High School down here in New Rochelle. I had probably 1,200 kids in my graduating class. I'd walk in the hallways and I meet a new kid for the first time every single day because it was such a big school. Went to New Rochelle High School, played freshman baseball. I was like an average, I'd say average level baseball player, really, in reality. Ended up trying out for my junior varsity baseball team, and this has a major part to do with Just In Time Baseball. But I tried out for my junior varsity baseball team, and I actually got cut, almost like the I don't want to say the Michael Jordan story, but I got cut from my junior varsity baseball team, and it was a big road, almost like Forrest Gump, like which road do you take? I said I could either stop playing baseball and maybe try for golf. I love golf, right? I'm like, I could just play golf, or I could just work 10x harder and try out for the varsity team, because at that level, I would be the next year a junior. I went up to the junior varsity baseball coach in the parking lot the following day. He thought I was going to like come up to him and like punch him or something. Like, he was like, whoa. And I just straight up asked, I said, coach, what are things I need to do to get better? Like, just straight up, instead of just complaining about it, what are things I need to do to get better? He said, oh, you got to hit, you got to do this. Ultimately, what I heard is I just got to do more. And something that we preach here, you know, a lot of times people try to reinvent the wheel. Ultimately, it's a matter of just doing more of the same in the basics and being brilliant at the basics. I just posted about this. But long story short, ended up making the varsity by the skin of my teeth the following year. Grinder, was not the kind of player that, had any offers out of high school. I went to junior college. I went to WCC, Westchester Community College. And it was like one of the best decisions of my life. It was a great stepping stone for me. The baseball was fantastic. I happened to get a lot of at-bats. I got 100 in the junior college, I know you speak to people that coach and play at JUCO. It's such an amazing, underutilized opportunity. You can have 130, 140 at-bats as a freshman. at junior college, where some of these four-year schools that you might not see the field till your junior season. Went to Westchester Community College, always just scratched and clawed, didn't have any natural ability, but just really throughout the journey, just kept chugging away, played at JUCO, Westchester, ended up playing at Purchase College, had a pretty nice career there. But ultimately, unfortunately, my career got cut short. I had a bunch of concussions. My head was a magnet for the wall for diving for fly balls and, you know, trying to go all out, trying to go crazy, but, everything for the team, but basically now, as I'm getting out of Purchase College, I had to make money. Okay. And I said to myself, I love working with kids, and just by giving some private lessons in the neighborhood, one lesson became two lessons to three, and my one-on-one business started to grow. And then obviously COVID happened. So this was, I've been doing it for 5 years individually. During COVID, I started a virtual baseball phys ed class, and it was great. It was positive messages of the day. It was like a phys ed positive. Kids were cooped up in the house, and everything was on Zoom, and it was all positive messages and baseball skills and some phys ed skills as well. And it just blossomed into this organism of a youth development, not just, yes, I was teaching baseball, but positive messages, life lessons. And I really preface by saying youth development. And fast forward from 2020 to 2023, as we're about to be at the end of the year, we're now, you know, we have 20 coaches. We're in 12 different little leagues, rec departments. We have over 1,000 kids in our program, ages 4 to 11 years old. And really the whole preface is skill development and youth development through the game of baseball and softball. And also along with that, I also finished my master's in physical education as well while building this company. So that's a long-winded answer. That's who I am. That's where we're at now. And I'm very passionate about it. And we got a lot more to go. We're just getting started.
Well, I think that what you mentioned about everybody's path being different, that's certainly true. And I always look at it now like, really, it, you know, what we did when we were younger doesn't really, I don't want to say it doesn't have anything to do with, but in other words, if you were not a high-level player, it doesn't necessarily mean that you shouldn't be involved in baseball. Let's put it that way. Because I could say with my background, you would never think that I would have reached the levels that I've gotten to. So what I always say to everybody is that your background really doesn't matter. And sometimes a lot of people look and they want to use their background as a justification for why they got where they are. And it doesn't necessarily matter. What happens is it just matters where you are now and what you're doing and how you're helping the kids.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and I know you and I were talking on the phone about this subject where you have players / coaches that get into coaching and coaching that have been doing it for a long time. And they have a high baseball pedigree as far as where they played, coach, but ultimately the delivery of instruction, and I know we're going to dive into it, is the separator, especially at the youth level. And I talk about it all the time.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Because again, if you can't, you know, let's face it, as coaches have said it a million times, we are teachers. Not everybody is cut out to be a teacher. So it's a different animal. What you did when you played is one thing, and your athletic ability is one thing, and teaching it is another.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, the baseball knowledge, obviously, and this is like when we're looking for just-in-time coaches, because our company is a little different because we have a niche where we really, I say this to coaches all the time who I talk about just coaching in general, we work with the forgotten age bracket. We start as young as 4 years old. So when I interview coaches, and I had a coach that played for the Detroit Tigers, I said to them, I said, listen, it's great that you play for the Detroit Tigers, but do you know how to speak to a six-year-old? Like your delivery and your delivery of instruction. Yes, you need the baseball pedigree, but it's your delivery of instruction and your empathy and the tools on which you go about your teachings is really what it's all about. And if you tie in the baseball knowledge and softball knowledge, it's that's what makes an ultimate youth coach.
Absolutely. So tell us, you say you start at 4. So tell us what you do, say, with players that are from 4 to 6 years old. How do you train them? You know, how do you develop them?
So what we do with Just-in-Time Baseball is we will be a bolt-on solution to these rec departments, such as I know you're familiar with Westchester Rye, all these rec departments that we're in. We're all over Westchester County. And rec departments, Little League, T-balls. And what we do, our goal when we come into a Little League is to really, as a bolt-on solution, we provide the staff. And our goal is to increase the retention rate in these T-ball and rookie ball levels. So from 4 to 9, T-ball, coach pitch, first year kid pitch. Our goal is, how do we make these kids engaged? Obviously have skill development. We do teach the skill development. But how do we make it interesting for the kids without coming off like a clown and retain kids? That's really our goal. So what do? We make it fun. We have different ways where, and something that I take a lot of pride in our staff, our staff has a mandatory weekly professional development where we will bring in not only baseball, softball coaches, but we'll bring in professors from Manhattanville College in education to talk about behavior management, to talk about the delivery of instruction. So how do we train a 4 to 7 year old? We do our very best to make it as engaging, moving, fun. Obviously that ties into engaging and the absolute basic fundamentals in a positive environment. So those all encompassing principles, that's what we do. And we could dive into that.
Yeah, because I'm interested. And I always have been interested in, because again, I hate to do this, but I always go back to, you know, when I played baseball. All right, so back in the late 60s, early 70s, you didn't start playing baseball till you were 8 years old. So I often wonder with like I'll use 4 year olds. They can't throw and they can't catch. So what do?
Great question. So we want to have each kid reach their own potential. What does that mean? Each kid has a different potential. We say this for ages, not just 4, but 14 or 16, right? So you might see a 4 or 5 year old in our T-ball rec program that we bolt on with. One kid literally might know how to catch. Even you have some 8 year olds that don't know how to catch. You have some 4 year olds that know how to catch a ball. Then you have the majority, 80% of them, I'd say, where they're literally just learning how to catch. So we'll get creative with it. So we'll incorporate, depending on the, you know, coordination, the balance. I'm a big fan of like tennis balls, bean bags, self-catch. I don't believe in partner catch for a T-ball level until they really are at 6, 7 years old. As you can imagine, at the T-ball level, partner catch, you just got, you know, baseballs and tennis balls flying all over the place. So I'm a big proponent, especially from a management standpoint, because what we do is we'll see 100 kids, right? How do you work with 30 T-ball kids and your 3 coaches, or 50 kids with 3 coaches? It's pure management. So we like to really preface by doing individual and partner activities. Everything we do at the T-ball level is individual and partner activities. So we'll do self-catch with beanbags. We'll do self-catch with a tennis ball and just mix up the variations. And everything goes back to, you know, individual and partner activities, especially at the T-ball level, if that answers your question.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like I said, the beanbag thing, I love, you know, because, again, they're going to have that fear of catching the ball. Tennis ball, for those that maybe are a little bit more advanced. But the one thing that came to mind when you were talking was, you said that you work with a lot of different little leagues. That caught my attention because I want to know how they accept you. Because my experience, and I'm sure Dave, you're the same way, is that the local little leagues, Cal Ripken organizations, youth baseball, they don't want the help from guys who know better.
great. That's a great subject. And this is something I talk about on our social media. Every little league and rec department that we come into, this is a new principle that I'm going to start implementing into 2024 for all our little leagues and rec departments. When I speak to these parent coaches, when we come in as just-in-time baseball, I am coming in there not as the messiah. I am coming in there to work in unison with all these little leagues, meaning our company, Just-in-Time Baseball, our goal is to work in unison, to bolt on, not to make it just-in-time baseball, T-ball, or rookie ball. This is really your little league, and we're here as a bolt-on solution to work in unison to give you the tools and the resources to help succeed and help retain kids. That's really my pitch, and it's the truth. Like, that's what we do.
Yeah, but so, but if you take, like, again, like Dave and I, high school coaches, and I know, you know, my experience has been if we offer to help, and look, we're just coming in to help train your players, teach them the game, teach your coaches how to coach, and which will be better for everyone else, it hasn't been met with, you know, great joy. It's been like, get out of here, we don't need you.
Totally, and I think it really comes down to, and again, this is a work in progress, but it really comes down to prefacing the point where we're not coming in here to reinvent the wheel. We're coming in here to truly help you facilitate your existing little league and not trying to change anything. I mean, certain things we are changing as far as to help you, as far as like the management. We really, I'm very hardcore and very strict on my principles on behavior management, group management, you know, keeping kids engaged. But ultimately, their little league is going to continue to be a little league with or without just-in-time baseball. But our service comes in there and ensures that kids stay in the league, are engaged, and, you know, continuing to grow and growing the game. And help being working in unison. But to answer your question, Jimmy, it's not easy because we've come to different little leagues where one year they've said, oh, we don't need you. You know, we do it on our own. We have our own coaches. And then in 2 years, we're in their little league. So it's a battle, no doubt about it, because everyone, you know, does it their way or at least has their own set ways. But certain people are more open than others, for sure. And I think it's just only good for the game to allow that unison to happen, that partnership to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think the environment changing as much as it has is in terms of baseball over the last decade or so since Jimmy and I was in there for maybe an extra year or two longer than Jimmy when we were involved with our local league here, it was a constant us versus them feeling when it came to any type of outside instruction, like, oh, they're just going to steal our players for travel teams and blah, blah, blah. So it was something that, and I didn't have other than my kids and my neighbor's kids and things like that, I didn't have a horse in the race. I didn't have a travel team that I was trying to promote or anything like that. I just was trying to say, you know, why not get some people in that maybe know a little bit different information. You got to be careful saying that they know more, because nobody wants to hear that somebody else knows more. The egos were too high. But, you know, you talk about maybe they know different ways, different approaches to teach and all that. And we were trying to get our younger kids in. We went from, you know, T-ball started at 6 when my son, who's 23 now, when he was 6, that was the first year you could play T-ball. Within 2 years, it was 5. And then 2 years or 3 years after that, it was 4. But we weren't changing anything around or setting up any type of program to help the coaches coach these kids. And it was just for somebody like me and for Jimmy with the eagle eye view of what was going on. Like, you're just, yeah, you're signing kids up, but they're going to be gone in a year because, you know, you can't keep teaching. You can't, like, you know, you can't teach a 4-year-old what you're teaching an 8-year-old. Not for any length of time. It's just not going to work.
So something I talk about, and I'm sure this is a great segue, if you don't mind, you know, something we talk about in our professional developments is the age of the child should be equivalent to the duration of the drill. So if we're doing a T-ball station right? Literally self-catch. It should not be more than 4 minutes at a station if they're 4 or 5 years old. So again, that's just a rule of thumb we love to live by. And even if they're doing five stations, self-catch, dry swings, literally, okay, here's how you hold the bat, Johnny. Here's how you hold the bat. Bend your knees, take a swing, hold it, scratch your back. That's one station, right? And you as the facilitator, as that individual coach, could be doing that with 30 kids, right? If they're doing individual activities and it's 4 minutes a station, 4 minutes per station, and they're doing five stations, a 20-minute practice for a T-ball station getting five or 4 minute stations, five stations, whatever it is, you do the math, five times four. So if it's 5 4-minute stations, that's a lot for a kid, for a T-ball player. They're learning the principles. They're touching on each piece of the game. They're getting a dose of it. It's fun. They're engaged. And they're moving, right? Because we all know here on this, even at the high school level, standing around is the devil in any practice. So that's what we say. The age of the child is equivalent to the duration of the drill. And standing around is the devil. That's what it's all about.
Oh, yeah. Nobody wants to go to a practice and stand around. And again, that's one of the challenges that we even face at the high school level is making sure that we plan our practices so that everybody is moving constantly. You know, and supposedly we have our players' attention. So at the younger ages, it's got to be, you know, harder to keep that attention and keep them active.
It's really all about, again, getting creative and not trying to reinvent the wheel. Also being empathetic, right? When you're speaking to a child and you're saying, okay, left foot out, arm out, that is going to go in one ear and out the other. 80 to 90% of coaches will say that to a kid, to a let's just say 5 to 6 year old. Because there's not a tremendous amount of four-year-olds. I'd say 5 to 6 year olds. That's a big age to get a kid, right? Like we before we bolted on with Bedford Hills Katona Little League, I don't know if you're familiar with that in Westchester. Before we came on, it was 50 kids. They're now at 120 kids 3 years later. So whatever that percentage is on these principles. And basically 80 to 90% of coaches will say, okay, right foot, arm out, flex, throw. What's the problem with that? And I know we're here, audio here. It's not visual, right? So the delivery of instruction, understanding that child has no idea what you're talking about, right foot, left foot. They do. They know right foot, left foot, some of them. But they understand visual more than the auditory, right? They're visual learners. So like understanding from an educational standpoint, delivery of instruction, that you need to really preface visual instruction as opposed to right foot, left foot. Put your hands up. You need to demonstrate. Should be a little dose and then go, right? Should be a little dose with visual and then go. Dose, pause, give your instruction, visual, then go. So shorter, visual, and just, you know, decreasing the amount of standing around for sure. We try to highlight from a mechanical standpoint. So as you can see that I take a lot of thought into what we're doing.
Yeah, I definitely agree with the visual thing. I know that in order to really teach something, you yourself have to be able to, you have to be able to do the movements that you're trying to teach so that when you're teaching it, you could actually show somebody, like you said, visual on how to do that. So I think that that's a big part of it. Yeah, you can sit there and talk until the cows come home, but, you know, it doesn't have as good an impact as somebody watching you actually do something.
No doubt about it. And also and something we preface also is your delivery of instruction. We can even go to 7-year-olds or 8-year-olds, that first year coach pitch. Cause that's a big sweet spot is 4 to 9. Right. And it's not just bringing in Mike Trout to your little league. It's, how do we keep it engaging? How do we retain the kids that are there and grow their game by making it more interesting? And that doesn't mean adding a pitch clock in Little League, and that doesn't mean making the bases bigger at D-ball. It's, I believe, and I said this to them, especially at our MLB events that I do for them, it's your delivery of instruction, for sure. It's going to help. It's what's going to help them stay engaged and your love of teaching. So another thing we talk about when we're doing a practice, if you're doing, let's just say, a partner ground ball drill. They're doing a partner. You have 20 kids and you have, you know, obviously 10 sets of partners, whatever. Instead of when you're giving your instruction, shouting it, bring them in, give the instruction, huddle them up, show a visual demonstration of Johnny and Timmy doing it, then break them out. So what does that all go back to growing the game? Let's just say you don't do that. It's 20 kids. They're spaced out. You as that coach are shouting. Half the kids have no idea what you're talking about. Half the kids are like, what is it? Confused. And what happens? They get discouraged. They get discouraged. They don't want to play. And that's how this, that's how the trickle down effect happens. So this is why I say delivery of instruction and keeping them engaged is not just like, you know, being a clown blowing horns. It's your delivery, making them engage, and how you do it is vital. And that's what's going to, and helping each kid reach their own potential, that combination.
Yeah. And I would also say that as you're teaching young kids, one of the most important things to do is to praise the kid for every little gain that they're making.
No doubt.
Because I believe that a lot of times what happens is, I won't say that youth coaches knock the kids down, but they won't pay attention to a kid that maybe is not getting the drill, maybe is not doing it correctly. You know, they may try and help them a couple of times, but then after a while they give up. Okay, so I think that the more you can praise the kid and more you could make him feel like he's making small gains, well, like you say, keep him engaged, keep him playing, and eventually, because we all know that players develop at different rates, you don't know what a five-year-old kid is going to be when he's 15.
So two points to that, and I love that you brought that up. I also will, if you don't mind me adding to that, Jimmy.
Not at all.
Is specific feedback, right? I tell our coaches and our professional developments, don't just say good job. That's like almost not subconsciously insincere, right? Like good job. How about like, you know, Jessica, great eye contact while I'm giving instructions. Jessica, I love the way that you, when you caught that fly ball, you made sure your hand stayed up. Whatever it is, give specific praise, and also give them specific praise on the intangibles. Like the great book, Dale Carnegie, they love to say their name. People love to know their name or be called by their name, and specific praise is the big thing. And also for the intangibles, great hustle out there. We are so big. I'm very fortunate. There's a great card store. I'm going to give them a shout out. It's called American Legends. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
In Westchester. It's a great 30 years in business. I formed a very good relationship partnership with them. They give us tons of baseball cards. I buy all our cards there and Pokemon cards there. I'm a big fan of giving baseball cards and Pokemon cards out, even at 8, 9 years old. And I'm not giving out cards for home runs. I'm giving out cards for great hustle, great sportsmanship, great teamwork, great listening. Obviously, if I'll give a card for a great hit, but the intangibles too, specific praise. And it costs, let's just say you don't have the resources. Any little prize you could give out at the end of practice for the intangibles, you will see how much, and I know you know this both from your wealth of experience, but it's like, it's such a great investment. One of the best investments I tell youth coaches when I speak to parent coaches, one of the best investments you make, one of your poly spots, which I'll dive and I'd love to elaborate on it, poly spots for cones and baseball cards. Giving out cards for the intangibles and the little things that add up, for sure.
Yeah, any time that you can have some type of reward, and you had said that, you know, I think you used the age range up to 8. I would take it even further, because something that I probably, and I'm not sure if I'll do it this year, but eventually implement in my high school program will be, you know, like some type of sticker when a guy has a quality at bat or a guy makes a good play, the guy goes the extra yard, that we're going to give him a sticker that's going to go on his helmet. And I'm doing that, you know, with high school seniors.
100%. 100%. It's such a pivotal thing. And again, it's all about the specifics of it too. I'm when we do it and we have our closure, just like in any practice, when we a great practice, in my opinion, is having a great closure to ensure that the kids retain at least one or two things, whether it's a high school practice or T-ball, rookie ball practice or training session, to retain that information, but really highlighting the specific positives and the intangibles. For sure. I mean, another big thing that we do, and I don't see this enough in T-balls, I make it mandatory, is name tags. So when we come into a practice, when you see 80 kids, it's the worst. And this is one of the biggest pivotal things for our company, principals. It's mandatory that they get a name tag. Because you see 80 kids once a week, you know, in 6 weeks, you're not going to know every kid's name. So instead of saying, hey, in the kid in the blue, as opposed to, Johnny, I love your Spider-Man shirt. How was school this week? Right? Like that builds a little league. That built, like that ultimately, the T-ball, rookie ball level, and doing those intangibles builds the interest of the game. And that's really what we're trying to do here. I want us to grow the game and increase retention rate. Because I'm sure you speak to, as you both are, wealth of knowledge and experience, and I love learning from both of you. Numbers are down. Like, numbers are down across America. They're down. So it's, how do we use different delivery of instruction methods and educational principles at the younger level to really retain kids, for sure.
That's the...
Well, yeah, and there's, you know, that's really what I remember. There was a few of us, not just Jimmy and myself, but when we were on the board of our local league and in some of the meetings and just having those kinds of conversations that, you know, the measure of success is not how many district titles you won or, you know, how many teams went to states of your all-stars. When you're talking about a town league, your measure of success is how many kids came back. Because it shouldn't just be about the 12 best kids in a league. Now, I mean, you're talking about younger kids where you don't have the all-stars yet and things like that, but they're playing tournaments at 6 and 7 years old already. You know, we've seen that travel tournaments, it's, which, you know, again, I think is crazy, but it's all about getting that kid to want to come back. Because if you can do that, everything else will fall into place. They have to be learning. They have to be getting better, or they have to be having fun, or they wouldn't be coming back. And that's, and the inverse obviously is true. Why would they not come back if they were learning and enjoying it and getting something out of it? Right.
No doubt about it. And again, as much as I'm talking about the delivery of instruction and principles to keep kids engaged, such as like duration is equivalent to the age of the child for a station, or bringing a kid in, a group in and speaking, or another way, something else I forgot to mention, you talked about how maybe coaches yell, which, you know, I say here, I say on our professional developments to our staff that we're just not that company. We never will be. Like, our tools in our toolbox as a youth coach, as a coach, we all have tools. Yelling is never something that will be done, because we do the work on the back end to ensure that everyone's safe, engaged, and you're empathetic, right? So like, if they're not listening to you in a station and what you're teaching, that's not, and this is why I say empathy. When you're teaching a drill and they're not paying attention, that's actually your fault as the coach, not the kids. Why? Think of it from that 7-year-old. You're a coach. You got 9 kids out there at shortstop taking ground balls. You got 1 kid waiting to catch a ground ball. What do you expect those other 8 kids to be doing? They're kicking dirt. Is that their fault or your fault? So taking empathy and understanding, like, what's a better way of doing that? How do we manage that so it's more engaging? Maybe we do a partner ground ball. Maybe meaning where you as the coach, as the parent coach, are observing those 8 kids and getting into 4 partners. And they could do partner ground balls, working on hands out in front, eyes behind the ball, you know, athletic position. And then it's more manageable and there's no standing around. So having empathy and understanding that is a big thing. And also when we deal with a behavior problem, which I'm sure I know you've all dealt with, something as simple as instead of yelling at a 7-year-old, how about just walking up to them, not in a dominating, threatening way, but just standing next to them, and also rewarding praise. We're a big fan of that. Sugar is better than vinegar. I always say this to our coaches. Sugar is better than vinegar. Instead of, hey, Timmy, put your glove down. Say, hey, Pete, I love the way you're in athletic position, ready to go and listen for the next station. That gets a lot more kids' attention than put the glove down. So, you know, sugar's better than vinegar, and management and empathy are huge for sure.
So we've talked a lot about, you know, what you do for the players. Tell us a little bit about what you do for the coaches. In other words, you're not there all the time. I mean, I'm not even sure. I think you said that you're there like once a week, maybe with a little league, but the coaches are going to be there with the players a lot more. So what are you doing to make them understand what they should be doing? How are they taking your message and moving forward with it?
So what we do is a typical setup is, for example, I'm going to use an example as Armonk. We're starting Armonk Little League. That's a little league locally here in Westchester. Big, big account for us. Fantastic. So we'll come in. They have their little league. And on a Saturday, we come in there at 12 o'clock and they run their T-ball. We run their drills and stations in unison with the parent coaches, where they run their own essential practice as if we didn't exist. But we give our instruction and we provide our coaches and come up with a practice plan together. So we'll come in there and essentially say, hey, to the parent coach, hey, we're thinking about doing ground balls today. So let's make sure that we're really focusing on these principles. I'll have a printed sheet of paper for the coaches with a plan. And again, they may very well say, and it's happened, like, hey, you know, we don't want to do that. We want to work on hitting, which is fine. But it's really a collaborative, like I talked about in the beginning, it's a collaborative effort where we have our plan. We come in, we come up with what we feel is the best for the child, for the group. And we work in unison with these parent coaches and come up with a plan. And really, ultimately, the goal is for me, Justin Sherman, as I'm bouncing around on a Saturday all day, like Uber, going from Armonk to Bedford, I'm giving my dose as well and my feedback as well. And really just working in collaboration with our plan and their plan, coming up with a plan together, and with our educational principles and delivery of instruction, and making sure we're together on the same page and making sure everything is smooth. Another thing that we do that I'm adding into 2024 is mandatory is a preseason coaches clinic, where I bring in every single coach, whether it's going to be on Zoom or it's going to be, you know, the week before the season starts. And I'm going to be going over different management and educational principles like we're talking about here for every single little league included in their, you know, account with us. So by doing that, and also by prefacing by saying I'm not the Messiah, these are just some things that have been working for us in our private programs, because we obviously see a lot of private programs, not just little leagues. So here's some ways that we help. Here's some educational and delivery of instruction principles that help us that I think will help you as a little league. So preseason, during, you know, having a plan, having a setup, and just really, really working in unison with them and not trying to be like you said, Jimmy, not trying to like be like this, beat my chest, I'm better than you. Just more of let me help you and let's work together. If that answers it.
Yeah, because that's one of the areas that I'm a big proponent of is coaching education. I we've talked about it 8 million times almost every show, where I think that a lot of times people feel like, well, I played, and I actually had Devin Morgan on from Driveline Baseball, and he had a great analogy. He said that, I think it was Devin, I hope it was Devin, but somebody said it. If you went to your first grader's classroom and asked the teacher what his qualifications were. And he said, well, you know, I was a student. You know, I did a little teaching here and there. You would have a fit because that teacher's not necessarily qualified in your eyes to be teaching your first grade student. So baseball, a lot of times, at the youth levels, people look at it like, well, I played baseball, so therefore I can coach. Well, as we all know, there's a lot more to it than just having played and knowing how to throw a baseball. There's a lot more to coaching. So I really believe that what you're doing with the coaches is probably more important than what you're doing with the kids because they're around them more.
100%. And this is something that I did not make mandatory 2 years ago, 3 years ago, but for no additional charge, talking from a, you know, I do, this is my, I'm blessed to say this is my career and livelihood, hopefully for forever. But for free, like this is something that I want to do all over, not just Westchester. I'd like to do this. And this is, I couldn't agree with you more, Jimmy. This is something where I feel the little leagues, that's where I think they'll get the kids to stay longer and play more.
Sure.
Is by really learning these principles, not just here's how you, you know, let's bring in a former major leaguer to talk about a launch angle. No, it's the delivery of instruction, the educational principles. Yes, the baseball knowledge. You need to have some knowledge, right? But a lot of some of this stuff you can, most of this stuff as far as from the mechanics, you can go on YouTube or go on Instagram and find that. It's the delivery and how you're speaking to the kids. How do you manage a practice? How do you manage kids? That is something that 100% needs to be taught to parents and coaches, not just in Westchester, across America.
So when you're doing your clinics and you're working with, you know, these little leagues, do you actually have the coaches on the field with you working with the players as you're doing this?
Yes, yes. So when we come into these little leagues, if we're doing a ground ball activity and making up, or hey, let's just say, yeah, ground balls, that coach, that parent coach will be either rolling, will be participating in the instruction.
Okay.
And I say this to the little leagues that I speak to, like, we're not coming in here and saying, step aside. Your little league exists with us or without us or whatever, like, they're going to exist with or without us. We're coming in here to just help facilitate. So to answer your question, yes, like they are on the field, like mandatory. You have coaches that kind of think we'll come into little leagues and they love it. By the way, they, so a lot of the times they love it. Like, oh, I don't need to do it. You know, I'm just doing it because my kids, which is 98% of the time, really, I'm just doing it. You know, I there's no one really stepping up. I'll step up. I'll do it. Then you'll have those coaches that like are really want to do it. There's a mixed bag, but you know, the coaches, a lot of the times will come in and they're kind of like on the sidelines, like, oh, they got it. I don't need to do anything, but no, that's not how you build a league. Not by, you need to work in unison. They got to be involved. And by coming up with a plan and giving them a specific plan, like, hey, even if they know nothing about baseball, which a lot of times they don't, hey, your job is just to straight up roll ground balls and make sure that they're having their hands out in front and not, you know, bending like a frog. They're in an athletic position. And them just doing that, like that, and being positive and giving some behavior management principles, like I talked about, like, you know, the name tags, rewarding positivity, sugar, butter, and vinegar, you'd be surprised, goes 10x way, goes a huge way for a little league. For sure.
Right.
So to answer your question, yes, they're working in unison with us. I make it mandatory.
I'll bet that goes a lot further with the parents as well. You know, like nobody wants to be as an adult, nobody wants to be talked to like, what, you don't know how to field a ground ball. You don't know a proper arm angle for throwing, whatever. So by explaining it that way, and it's from an old movie, an old Denzel Washington movie where he's an attorney and he's telling the witness, you know, explain it to me like I'm a 6-year-old. And that, right, it was a long way, because if you don't know, if you never played or you played, you stopped playing when you were 10 years old or whatever, then you have no idea. But you certainly should be able to absorb it quicker than your 6-year-old kid or 3-year-old kid or whatever. So that should go a long way with that as well.
I'll tell you that. And also, yes, skill development, but really with the parent coaches, a lot of times they get frustrated. And that's where the yelling comes in. They get frustrated, and this, I will go real deep here if you don't mind. They have some of the times, a lot of these parent coaches who are yelling, they're taking out their internal frustration, whether it's baseball related or not, and taking that out on a child, like, hey, come on, get up, does absolutely nothing for a kid. Like, absolutely nothing. So, like, really going back to empathy and understanding, like you just said, explain it to me like you're six. If you're 6 year old, would you understand, you know, left foot out, arm back, glove to the, it's in one ear, out the other. It's visual, bringing them in, and the way you're delivering your message in the simplest form is the separator, and it is actually going to retain even deeper. It's going to retain more kids because they're going to understand it. They're going to enjoy it more. And that is the domino effect.
Yeah. I think what you said about the simplest form is really important, because I don't think it's age specific. Even at the major league level, they take certain aspects of the game and they break it down into very little pieces. And that's the way you develop. You have to take it in small doses. You can't, you know, I don't care how old you are, you can't dump the whole thing on somebody and say, okay, I expect you to hit this way. It's got to be small doses.
Again, I say this to every parent that invests. I call it an investment when you're with Justin Dime Baseball, because I really try to emphasize this, not just being a baseball company. This is a youth development company. I want our kids that come into our program to be the best part of their day. When I say to these kids, like, we're not going to say anything that's reinventing the wheel. What is somewhat reinventing the wheel is the way we're delivering our message and the way we're trying to engage each child. We're not giving a better drill than what you said most of the time, right? Like there are times that parents, most of the time parents don't know. And that's why they're investing with us. They're to learn the game. But if you go to XYZ company, what I try to really preface when they register or when they bring us aboard is the separator is the delivery of instruction, the simplicity, and our educational principles. It's not what drill we're teaching. It's more of the management of young kids. That's the separator.
All right, now, so the really big question comes in. Where do you find your coaches? You had mentioned you had quite a few coaches. Where do you find them?
So I know you and I talked about this as far as finding coaches. It's not easy, but I will tell you it's a little bit easier with us only because, and again, I might be being hypocritical when I say this, but they need to know the game, but what I'm looking for is energy, passion, and are they willing to learn, right? Like as we are growing our company, I really put more of an emphasis on the professional development, and they're all paid to be there, like class. I mean, I don't think it's such a bad deal that they get paid to learn how to coach better on Zoom. I think it's a great deal, 360 win. And I think it's very attractive. At least I would look at it that way. How do we find our coaches? It's I'm looking for energy. I'm looking for willingness to learn. And do you love working with kids? The baseball pedigree is almost secondary. I want to see, do you love working with kids? And are you passionate about teaching? That's what I'm looking for. A lot of our coaches are phys ed teachers, special education. And some of them are in finance, and then after school, you know, after 5 o'clock, they're with us on the field. So I have a mixed bag. I have, you know, coaches that have played Division I baseball that I own a college, and I have, you know, someone that is working in finance, barely played high school baseball, and is also coaching with us. It's, do you love working with kids? Are you passionate about really engaging? They have to love working with young kids. Like, I hear coaches that are like, it's just babysitting. Like, no, we're not a babysitting service. This is an educational youth development company. We take it dead seriously. Just like a kindergarten teacher, you know, a kindergarten teacher molds their future, right? Learning, math, reading, et cetera. That's the way I look at it with us in baseball. for the elementary school level, I preface how well you deliver your instruction, your love of teaching, and, you know, obviously baseball pedigree is important. I don't want to say it's not. But those two things, three things are major. One of my senior coaches, and he's phenomenal. His name is John Mattia. I just brought him aboard. He is one of our field directors. He barely played. He stopped playing in ninth grade. But I brought him aboard. Why? He's an unbelievable communicator. I put him with the 4 to 8 year olds, and he has a special ed degree, and he was voted New Rochelle Teacher of the Year. He's a phys ed teacher in the New Rochelle School District by all the teachers. As someone that works with young kids, our company, I want him on our staff. He, you know, him telling me if he played for the tight, whatever. The fact that he's Teacher of the Year and the other teachers thought that, that's a value to me. And, you know, that's something I look for. Like, his delivery of instruction is exceptional. So baseball pedigree, but also delivery of instruction, educational background, and just energy and love of teaching and willingness to learn, because we dive deep in these developments. I bring in some of the best minds, and I'm speaking to both of you here as great minds. I'd love to have both of you in a professional development speak to our staff. But I take that very seriously. And that's what I think separates us.
Well, I love the way you're attacking it, we'll say, from the bottom up, because that's an area where I don't believe a lot of people find, a lot of people understand the importance of getting them when they're very young and working with them developmentally on rudiments so that they become better baseball players when they're older. I think a lot of focus nowadays is on how quick can we get these kids playing 100 games a year, and, you know, at early age groups. So I commend you for targeting the younger players, because, again, what you're doing, teaching them these basics, making it fun, bringing them back every year, educating the coaches, this is all what needs to be done.
Well, I appreciate the words. And listen, it's a process, right? Everything's a process. You never stop learning. I'm learning. And this is what I said to you at the beginning of the podcast. Like, I'm looking forward to learning from you. Us having this conversation, like, you can't be closed-minded. You need to be open-minded. And I do think that is a problem across America. And I know that's a bold statement, but, like, the willingness to, like, learn from others and be open to learning, and depending, no matter what their ages and experience level is, you can learn from everybody.
Sure.
And implementing it into your toolbox. Every youth coach, and forgetting just youth coach, every coach has a toolbox in their toolbox, like different ways to deliver their message. Your high school baseball team, you have different tools. Hey, this team, you know, we're not, you know, we're lacking in this department this season right now. How do we, what can I do? What in my toolbox can I use to better engage the kids and get the most out of them? We're trying to get the most out of each child, not only as a player, but as an individual, to make them a better individual. So in your toolbox as a coach, learning and growing, it's important to just continue to add in your toolbox and knowing when to hit what button. I think that's the separator. Knowing when I could, you know, what I could say to this kid and not say to this kid, what I know about this child. Something I added this year, and I know I'm going on a tangent here, and I apologize, David, as I'm passionate about this, and we all are. Something we added, and this was actually an idea by one of our coaches, is to add, when they register for a program, to add a little things I need to know about your child to help them. Not just like they got a peanut allergy, but like, you know, Johnny is dyslexic, right? So maybe your delivery of instruction at an eight-year-old level, even though you might not be trained educationally, by having that background, your delivery of instruction to Johnny might be, you might think twice before you're speaking to him. Or, you know, this kid, this child has, I don't know, whatever it is, knowing your players and knowing what buttons to hit to get the most out of each child is critical as well, for sure.
Yeah, I had just gotten an email from one of our listeners just the other day, and he had just gotten a position as a JV coach, and he asked me to give him the three most important things that I thought he should know going into it. And one of the things I said is just what you said, get to know the person before you know the player. The person comes first. Know the person, and then you can help them better as a player.
100%. I had one example. We had a kid, and this happens a lot in our program, right? We'll have a child that signs up for a private. We had a rookie class, 7, 8 year olds, whatever. The parents like, oh, you know, my son's friends are doing it. We signed them up. You drop them off. You see him for the hour. Like, you know, that for sure happens a lot. Kid did not want to do anything, right? Didn't want to do anything. Always wanted to go home. 7, 8 years old. I think he was 8. Actually, he was 8. Always wanted to go home after. And it was really like, you're just going to have those kids that are just like at this level, right? At the T-ball, they're like from like 5 to 8, you're going to have that. And as you get older, obviously kids fall off the different activities. The goal is to increase that number, to increase the retention. But bottom line is the kid would always wear a Spider-Man shirt. And I tell this to our coaches. I one of my coaches was struggling getting through to him. I said, you know what's a great idea? To one of our coaches, I said, whatever you're doing, just make it Spider-Man version. So you're doing a ground ball drill. Talk about Spider-Man. Don't talk about baseball. Make it a Spider-Man drill, whatever. It was like a wall ball drill, which is great, by the way. Throwing a ball against the wall, and they had to catch it. I told the coach, make it a Spider-Man catch. He built such a rapport with that kid by just talking about Spider-Man. Hey, give me the cool Spider-Man pose. The kid's been with our program now for 2 years. As silly and maybe simple as that sounds, by building that rapport and getting to know what gets the most out of that child, the kid's now been with us for 2-3 years, and now he loves baseball. So like doing stuff like that and having that in your toolbox and being empathetic and understanding that is major, not only for a 7-year-old, but for like you said, a 15-16 year old. Maybe not a Spider-Man example, but knowing that child and what gets the most out of them in particular.
I love that. I know, and my apologies to our guests. We've had multiple guests on that in the last couple of years that have talked about that as a specific thing, you know, being a not just being a transactional coach, and it's not just about getting them in, get the money, get them out, and really getting to know the kids. Last year, I felt like I personally made a lot of strides in making a better connection. And some of the kids had been on, also a JV coach, a couple of the kids had been with us for 2 years already. And I just feel like just that little bit of a paradigm shift in my approach with the kids and getting to know them a little bit better. You know, it took some time to break the walls down because I was known a little bit more as the disciplinarian of the two coaches. As the assistant coach, I felt like that was more my role to do, and it, we played well off. And I'm not a screamer. I wasn't just screaming at people, but when it had to be done, it was more likely to be me than the other coach. So it took some time to break those walls down, but I think it made a tremendous, and this, you know, you're talking about 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds. I'm talking about mid-teens, you know, 13s, 14s, on the JV team. It's the same concept. And, you know, when you talk about getting to know, what do I need to know about your kid? I can remember one of the last years I coached, which was when I was coaching in the Little League age. You know, my younger son is 20. So you're talking about 8 years ago. You know, I had one of the parents come up to me after the, or before the first practice, oh, you know, whatever the kid's name was, we'll call him Jimmy. Little Jimmy is, you know, he's ADD or ADHD. And I remember just being like, okay, what am I supposed to do with that? But, you know, through the years, having learned as much as I have over the last, you know, 5 years or so, like there's a lot of things that I could do with that piece of information. And that's, I'm constantly thinking about things that I will say did wrong, but just being ignorant of, you know, a better way of doing things, because nobody was trying to teach me. Nobody was trying to tell me. I was looking up videos and things like that, but that was on drills and proper form and technique. It wasn't about that more interpersonal aspect of it. So I think bringing that in as a young an age as possible is great.
Yeah, and this is something I'm working on behind the scenes, and I'm going to say it here first. Like, I am working on creating a course for free where it's just delivery of instruction. It is not, okay, here's ground ball drills. Here's hitting drills. There needs to be something that is, how do you speak to kids? I'm not talking four. How do you talk to a kid who's nine who doesn't understand what you're talking about? How do you engage that child? I think, like you said, Dave, I think that's pivotal. And that's what helps grow the game. No doubt about it. Like, it's a major, major concept for sure.
Yeah, you want these kids to come back. You better be making some kind of a connection with them. I mean, that's...
Yeah, and ultimately, if you want to talk about it, actually ends up being transactional for the benefit of both of you, because ultimately they're going to understand it better. They're going to be more engaged, and you're going to get a better result out of your player. You're just going to get a better result. So it's a 360 win, truly. It's the wholesome essence of coaching and everything. It's better for the child, and also for your own sake, you're getting the most out of that kid on the field by having that in your tool, knowing how to get it, dive into your toolbox as a coach.
Yeah, definitely.
So I'll say two things just to close this out. And again, I really do appreciate both of you, and it's so great. We all love talking. We're all passionate about just helping kids and the game of baseball. But the two, really the close is, like, being a youth coach is an awesome responsibility, and starting even as young as 6-7 years old at that level, you know, really understanding it's an awesome responsibility. It's not babysitting. It is really, you're molding their clay. You're molding their future for their interests of the game. Now, certain kids are just not going to play. But ultimately, giving, it's not even about baseball. It's also about, like, giving them a positive experience in an athletic sport, which is an awesome responsibility. Being empathetic, and this might sound very corny, but just being positive, right? Like I said, sugar is better than vinegar. It's such a big thing. Use strategies, which I know anyone can contact me. Use strategies to help get your message and keep kids engaged more often than not, no doubt about it. So I just want to help as many youth coaches as possible, and I want to learn as much as well.
All right. Well, I think that's a great note to end on. Everybody knows my thoughts on staying positive. So I love that you ended up with that. So Justin, give our listeners an idea where it's the best way to get in touch with you, websites, socials, all that good stuff.
Yeah. So again, the biggest way to reach us, if you go to our Instagram, Justin Time Baseball, we're always posting tips for youth coaches, not just for 4-year-old T-ball coaches, but 8, 9, 10, 11. We really are more than just four. It's 4 to 10, 11, but we're always posting tips on Justin Time Baseball, TikTok, Justin Time Baseball. And also just our website, justintimebaseball.com. And you can always call me. I'll give you my direct number is 914-420-8418. Any questions, I could give you practice plans. I'm in the process of giving out a lot of content as far as for coaches, youth coaching packets, video instruction as tools for your practice and just for your future as a coach on the field. So thank you very much.
No, I mean, I appreciate you coming on. Great conversation. And yeah, keep doing what you're doing. I mean, the ability to go in and work with these younger players and to try and give them that foundation, and at the same time, seems like you're helping coaches, you're helping parents, you're helping leagues to better understand what this is all about, that it's not about going out there and putting together a bunch of 6-year-olds to go compete every weekend and play 100 games a year. It's about developing skills that you'll need when you get older. I think this is great.
Well, I appreciate it, and I look forward to a long-term relationship. I know we'll run into each other again and talk again, and just thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
All right, great. Thanks for joining us tonight, Justin. And for those out there in our listening world, doesn't sound like there's a better opportunity to get on board with somebody bright and early with your kid's baseball career than getting involved with just in time. So thanks a lot for coming out, and we appreciate your time.
So there it is. I really enjoyed this conversation. I got to tell you, I mean, you know, there was a lot of good stuff. I like Justin's approach. I like that, you know, he's training these young kids. He's doing it both mentally and physically, and he's also working with parents, and he's also working with coaches. So, look, this is a win-win situation for everybody involved. And, hey, don't forget to follow us. You know, subscribe. Hit that subscribe button so that, you know, you don't miss out on anything. You can reach us on Twitter, at the CTB Show. We're on Facebook. And by all means, send us an email, clearingthebases@gmail.com. We really, really love hearing from you. I can tell you that what I gathered from a lot of what Justin has to say is people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Thanks, everyone, and we'll see you on the next one.